Good evening and welcome to Corporations and Democracy for April 18th, 2024. This is the program that examines how corporations dominate our democracy and what citizens are doing to replace corporate dominance with true democracy. I'm Steve Scalmanini with co-host Annie Esposito. With Earth Day coming up on Monday and several related events this weekend, we thought today was a good time to look at the current state of climate change. What's going on in the county to diminish it, and what's in the way of progress? So we have two guests with us today. This is they're from Climate Action Mendocino. That's a group founded in 2018, I believe it was, after the wake-up call in late 2017. That was the fires in Redwood Valley that consumed hundreds of homes, and that's when the issue of climate change really was, again, the wake-up call for the county. We should do something. So Eileen Mitro is one of the founders and organizers of Climate Action Mendocino. She's been coordinating meetings since its beginning 6 years ago. Eileen, welcome to the program.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And Crispin Hollinshead has also been with Climate Action Mendocino since its beginning and brings his extensive experience and knowledge in electric utilities and renewable power generation. So welcome to the program, Chris.
Thank you.
And in the interest of full disclosure, I should mention that I myself am a member of Climate Action Mendocino, have been since those early meetings back in 2018 when we were just starting to get organized. So I wanted to begin by addressing what is the state of climate change today. This is particularly in lieu of headlines in recent months, a little more alarming than the headlines even in the latter several months of last year regarding ocean temperatures and air temperatures and such. And there's been some recent graphs about that that are really eyebrow raisers. So with that, Chris, can you tell us some about what's got your attention in the media and some of the graphics that have come out in recent months?
Well, all right. Let's start with the graphic you were referring to about sea surface temperature. That generally it's getting warmer every year, but what really got everybody's attention last year was it started out below previous highs, but by the first few months it exceeded everything that had ever happened and stayed that way for the rest of the year. And this year started out even higher than all of that and is continuing to probably going to exceed all the previous expectations. Now, you got to understand that's since record keeping began. And what's driving all this, of course, I'm sure everybody knows, is that we've gone from 280 parts per million carbon dioxide in the atmosphere to today it's about 425 parts per million. That's a 50% increase in 200 years. Now, the shift and what happens when there's more CO2, it holds more heat in the atmosphere and everything follows from that. The change from the end of the last ice age to what we call the intermediary period where humanity developed was another 50% increase from about 180 to 280. So what we've already done in about 20 times faster, 25 times faster than the natural time it happened last time, is created an environment which hasn't been seen, an atmospheric chemistry that hasn't been seen on this planet for maybe 4 to 10 million years. Certainly no humans have ever lived in this climate before. And everybody alive today, no matter how old you are, we're living in a climate which was very different from the climate we were born into. All right, so that's the start. And a couple of little factoids that get my attention is like 3 days ago, Dubai had 2 years worth of rain in one day. Now, that was only 5 inches of rain, but it devastated everything. And the video of the storm coming in and just deluging the place was phenomenal. Last summer, what really got my attention was Greece had 22 inches of rain in one day. Now, that's only a year's worth of rain in a day because they are a little more rainy there in Greece. But the consequence, the impact, was just as striking. And then the final little factoid I'd like to add in here is that a couple days ago, Jeremy Powell's the head of the U.S. Fed said that one of the growing forces of inflation is the increasing uninsurability of our infrastructure, that the climate disasters are happening more and more severely and rapidly, and so the insurance companies can't afford to keep insuring things. And just as a sidebar, if your property is uninsurable, it loses about 80% of its market value, like right now. So start to think about what the economic impact of that might be, let alone all the other things like inundations, the electrical grid going down. I mean, the adverse impact of the climate issue is profound.
And I'd like to toss out a few quotes from an article just less than a week ago. It was just Friday, April 12th. This was from Common Dreams by the author Bill McKibben, a big name in the climate action. And so here's a few quotes from there. Atmospheric levels of the three main greenhouse gases reached new all-time highs last year. 2023 was the 12th consecutive year that CO2 increased by more than 2 parts per million. March, just last month, was the hottest March ever recorded globally. This is the 10th consecutive monthly record that has shattered all previous records. That's for warmth, atmospheric warmth. Warming is accelerating in the past 10 to 15 years, especially in the what we call the mid-latitudes. We'll comment on that a little later. There is a correlation, a reason why. Fossil fuel use is still going up, although its rate of rising is dropping some. So essentially, we've begun to plateau the use of fossil fuels. It's starting to, the rate of rise is dropping off some. And large amount, that is predominantly due to large amounts of renewable energy that are now coming online. 86% of new capacity for power generation in 2023, just last year, was from renewables. That's 473 gigawatts for those that keep track of the numbers. That's a big number, but the other news is that's quite far short, roughly half of the 1,000 gigawatts per year that is required to meet the world's climate commitments. So there's good news and there's not so good news to go with it. And we're going that, well, we're implementing clean energy at about half the pace that we need to actually maintain a stable climate. So there are other reports. By the way, this information is typically coming from either NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or from the Europe's, the EU's version of that, which is the Copernicus program of the European Union. Those are available online, and you can see the latest graphs that we've been looking at here. Again, the starting graph, first few months of this year show a very clear step function in heat, both ocean heat and air temperatures, from anything since records have began. So, you know, we're looking back over, you know, generations. And again, so it's been a step function up in heat. And I assume, and this is sort of a warning of what's to come, but so this may be the hottest summer we will have seen ever coming up in some parts of the planet. We won't know what parts yet, but this is coming, you know, and maybe significantly a step hotter than what we saw last year. So a few other quotes from some of these reports. There's a new absolute high reached of 21.09 centigrade degrees. That's the average daily SST surface temperature.
Sea surface temperature,
that is. And let's see, Europe's winter temperature was the second warmest on record after the winter of 2019 to 20. It's 1.44 centigrade degrees above the average for the previous 30 years. So there's work to be done, and that leads us to the topic of, well, what is being done locally, and who's doing what governments are involved, what public groups are involved individually. And with that, Eileen, can you give us an update on what's going on locally?
We have a lot going on locally, but we kind of have an outline of some of those salient points. So what I'd like to talk about first is the issue of rooftop solar. I imagine all of us have high regard for the PG&E line workers and office people who help us by restoring power, or those who help us find the best rate structure, and those who provide consistent service. But the PG&E corporate structure is another matter. PG&E is a profit-seeking entity that does everything they can to profit, which is required by law. It is my opinion that the California Public Utilities Commission, CPUC, has been historically and still is inclined to do whatever the utility industry wants. CPUC does not look out for consumer costs and are in the hands of the utilities and their profits at every turn. The utilities and the CPUC have hit the rooftop solar industry hard in the past couple of years. The reason 2023 net metering NEM3 rate that cut energy credits on solar down 75% from 30 cents a kilowatt hour to 7 cents a kilowatt hour for the solar power sent back to the grid. That cut makes investing in solar less worthwhile financially, and not surprisingly, rooftop solar installations have decreased 80% since the NEM3 change in 2022, and so far 17,000 solar workers have lost their jobs. The stated reason the utilities and CPUC changed to NEM3 is a public relations disinformation. They claim that only rich people were installing solar and causing rate increases. Not true. Over 50% of all solar adopters over the past 15 years have been low and moderate income households. A leaked sales presentation by a PR firm hired by the utilities suggested the idea of selling the NEM3 reduction in solar energy credits by blaming cost increases on rich people. While it's true that rooftop solar energy credits are higher than the industrial production costs of energy, an enormous benefit of solar rooftop production is that during high usage times that critically challenge the grid, rooftop solar has kept the grid functioning and avoided blackouts. Also, the transmission lines that would otherwise need to be upgraded for large industrial production are not needed. How we account for costs and benefits is critical. Don't be fooled when hearing that rooftop solar is too expensive. It's actually vital to our electrical grid. The state of California has determined that we need to triple electricity production to meet the goal of 100% clean energy. Rooftop solar has the ability to accomplish that and would save all ratepayers, not just solar customers, about $300 a year on energy costs if only PG&E would support solar instead of destroying it. That's bad enough, but it gets worse. In 2022, the CPUC agreed to a fixed charge of $24 a month on all ratepayers. Customers who conserve energy would see their energy costs spike by a fixed charge. The charge would be uncapped, meaning it could increase at any time. This would be the highest fixed charge in the country for electric customers, and California already has much higher electric rates than many other places around the country. Fortunately, we have some state legislators who are pushing back on the utilities and CPUC with bills to get rooftop solar growing again. Contact your assembly member to support these bills. AB 1999, Irwin, would cap the utility fixed rate tax at $10 a month for now and only be tied to inflation rates for any increases. No increases would be decided by the utility company. AB 2619, Connolly, would ban solar taxes and require CPUC to change net metering to encourage solar in order to meet the state energy goals. AB 2256, Friedman, would require CPUC to include all the benefits of rooftop solar to decide the credit solar users get. For example, solar helps prevent power blackouts. It would reduce long-haul energy transmission costs. It would help grid consistency, wildfire prevention, and more. If you're in California District 2, which is Mendocino County, contact Jim Wood, and his phone number is in Sacramento, 916-319-2002.
That was again 916-319-2002?
Yep.
Okay, and that's for Assemblyman Jim Wood. And the assembly bills that she mentioned is AB 1999 and AB 2619 and 2256.
And all that wonderful information that you just got from Eileen is available at the Solar Rights Alliance, and you go to their website at solarrights.org, and you'll find that information there, so you can go over it again if you want to.
Okay, that's solarrights.org, you said? Okay. I know it was going back a year and a half, 2 years ago, when we had someone on the program from Solar Rights Alliance, so we talked about that. The problem that would occur if the reimbursement rates were changed drastically and dropped, and they have been.
And sure enough.
And now we're seeing the predicted fallout. How logical. Okay, well, there are some other activities going on. Who can bring us up to date on what the city of Ukiah is up to for a climate plan, climate action plan and such?
Yeah, we've been impatiently waiting for the climate action plan to get underway and planned. There's been a fairly long delay, but it's turned out to be good news. We're likely going to be moving into a climate action adaptation and resilience plan, something that the state is hoping all jurisdictions do. But as it turned out, acquiring all of the greenhouse gas emission information, vehicle miles traveled, and whatnot took some time and came back not quite fully prepared, so needed to go back for revisions. Mm-hmm. And then at this point, the city has someone, a grant writer, who acquired a grant so that the Climate Action Adaptation and Resilience Plan can be written by a consultant that's done many of these, and that will be put out for community comment probably sometime this summer. So all of that is good news, and the hope is that we will actually have this plan in place by December of 24.
Super. Well, if it's as hot a summer as the numbers seem to be predicting, that issue will get lots of attention this summer. The city of Ukiah is doing rebate programs also, I believe. So what do we know about that?
Well, I haven't brought the sheet on the rebates, but if you come to Todd Grove Park for the Earth Day event, 10 to 4 on Saturday, April 20th, we have handouts that you can take home and take a look at for things that you might want to do for clean energy in your house, and there are rebates for solar and heat pumps, and I believe induction stoves and all sorts of things that will save you money on your energy costs, and also you get a rebate. Plenty of people are available to do those clean energy upgrades for you. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and there is rebates, I believe. The city is even including, has rebate programs for electric vehicles and for electric bicycles, of all things. Something I look forward to using around town once I get batteries, a new generation of batteries replaced on the one I have at home. So, and at the county level, they have been working on a few programs. I believe one is about greening the county buildings. What can you tell us about that?
Oh, boy, that's good news. Oh. We've been waiting. The county passed a net zero carbon reduction resolution, oh, I'll bet it was 2 years ago, with some funding through the feds. And we've been waiting to see some of that get into action. One of the things that has been taken care of is that chargers are in the works. It's probably going to take another year or so to actually see them, but one will be at the Social Services Center next to the co-op, and another set of chargers will be at the county buildings. But we've been waiting to hear about the county's clean energy upgrades on county buildings, and oh my goodness, it's been really slow. But we finally found out that the contract has, well, not the contract, but the contractor has been selected, and they're working on some of the final points for the contract. And I would guess that sometime in May we might see this in front of the Board of Supervisors and finally get some of those clean energy upgrades in the county buildings.
Super. That's good news. Yeah. Nice to hear. And those charging stations, I hope, will be used for more e-vehicles that the county is purchasing. So is that underway yet, or is that still a future?
From what I've heard, the issue with the EV fleet for the county is that the county decided around the time they passed this resolution to go with enterprise leasing rather than buy vehicles themselves and run them into the ground and try and sell them and have all sorts of difficulties around those issues. So they've got a program going with enterprise leasing for probably hybrids first and then EVs, but from what I understand, enterprise is having difficulty finding enough EVs to supply the county. It's a bother, but I suspect it will get addressed soon. Mm-hmm. And I guess the last element of that net zero reduction resolution was for MTA to have EV buses. And they have, I think it's two now. One is in the works getting whatever they have to do to it to make it roadworthy. And from what I understand, the EV buses are not as dependable as they should be. Mm-hmm. School buses are just fine, but EV buses have some mechanical difficulty, and Chris has some information.
Yeah, I think that the MTA has, a larger fleet than two, but it's a range issue that for the short routes, they work well. And I was talking to the head maintenance guy, and he said they're much easier to maintain. That's one of the common things about EVs. But what's missing is the long range. MTA recently started service from Fort Bragg through Willits down to Santa Rosa, and they've got connections up into Eureka now. And those kinds of long ranges are not able to be supported by the electric bus technology that's currently available and or dependable. And so what we've got is a problem where the actual hardware is still being evolved, and that's just the truth of the matter. Mm-hmm. But I'm pleased to see how much of a commitment there is at MTA to go all electric, in part because they're just easier to maintain.
Mm-hmm. Well, so it sounds like the coast routes to and back are not going to be electrified for some time, but the local routes inside the valley here, or even just the local coast routes, may be in the shorter term. I believe that Climate Action Mendocino, by the way, that was Crispin Holland said, we were just hearing from, and before that, Eileen Mitro, both members of Climate Action Mendocino. There is a couple of programs, I believe, that Climate Action Mendocino is working on. One of them involves food waste. Can you give us an update on that, Eileen?
Yeah, we've been talking with students at the high schools South Valley and Ukiah High School about food waste. Ukiah High School's Environmental Club is moving forward on whatever they can for dealing with food waste and recycling. And South Valley High School has been very interested in learning more about food waste and recycling. And the hope is that high school students can then take information on to the elementary schools and junior highs. And with educating our students, our youth, on how to deal with food handling and waste, they can take that information home to their households, and we should be able to better address food waste. Chris?
Yeah, one of the things that's important to understand is why food waste is a climate problem. And that is because when food waste goes into the landfill, it rots anaerobically and produces methane, which is 80 times more potent as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. If it's put into the green barrels and composted, which is an aerobic process, and there are three composting, industrial grades composting facilities now in the Ukiah Valley here, then what you get out of it at worst is carbon dioxide, which is much, much less of a problem relative to methane. Plus, you don't have the problem of adding waste of volume into the landfill, and you get an amazing soil amendment out of it in really healthy compost that's better than adding more artificial fertilizers.
I'd like to share what you can do with any food you may have that's edible and somewhat expired, not years old, but maybe a few days old. There's actually a Good Samaritan law where that can be offered to people when it's perfectly good, just a couple of days past expiration. And really, this is difficult, but the best way is to contact Susanna Seidensticker. And here is her email address. She said, feel free to email her, and she will either pick up food, edible food that can be recovered, or she's with NCO. And that's likely the most expeditious way. So her email address is seidensticker@ncoinc.org. Probably Steve will give that to you again. Susanna.
I can, because I just wrote it down real quickly. So Suzanne Seidensticker. So S-E-I-D-E-N, sticker, S-T-I-C-K-E-R, at ncoinc.org for any reusable food. And that is from that NCO North Coast Opportunities, I believe that is. And so that is one of the efforts underway in being helped by Climate Action Mendocino. Back to some of the physical upgrades that need doing requires a workforce development and such. We're not known for people, you know, in the county here that are hustling on construction projects. So what can you tell us about workforce development and such for a workforce to actually implement the kind of infrastructure that's needed?
We built our house nearly 20 years ago, and I was incredibly impressed at the time at all of the workers that were involved and how thorough and capable they were. At this point, as we think about clean energy upgrades in your house, heat pumps, maybe installing an electric vehicle charging station, induction stoves, insulation, changing your lighting to all LED, certain things that may need say, replacing your windows from single pane to double pane, things like that. We are at a deficiency in our county for those kinds of trades. As the tradespeople age and retire, we need youth trained to do that work. And I somehow got involved with the Redwood Region Resilient, Inclusive, Sustainable Economy Group. There are groups similar to that, 13 of them around the state, but we have one that covers Mendocino, Lake, Humboldt, and Del Norte County, and I go to most of the meetings and was fortunate enough to be appointed to the sector table dealing with workforce development. So there's really a lot going on. I have quite a bit of information on curricula that would maybe even be able to be introduced in middle school and certainly into high school or even for young adults. There's a lot coming on for developing our workforce and capitalizing on the wisdom and experience of those tradespeople that we have here in the county and are maybe moving on to retirement.
Well, super. That brings me to a topic which is getting some attention in the county and will get more in the coming weeks. There is a program with the Climate Action Program or Working Group over in the Grassroots Institute on the coast. By the way, Climate Action Mendocino is predominantly inland, Ukiah Valley and the greater inland area. And then on the coast, there's a working group in the Grassroots Institute that is also working on climate issues. And they are helping spearhead a campaign to prohibit any new fossil fuel infrastructure, particularly gas stations in the county. And that focus of that program is on one particular one, which is proposed for Redwood Valley. This is proposed for adjacent to what used to be Mario's Restaurant. It's right at the base of the Ridgewood grade. So as soon as the grade hits the flat there, then over on the east side is a service road with a few buildings there. And one of them is planned or intended to be to have constructed there. I think it's a 10, 12 or more pump gas station. And that brings up the issue of, well, are more gas stations really needed? If that's just going to take business away from other gas stations, do we really need more? And so there is a campaign to prevent that. And in fact, in December of this year, the applicant to build that gas station was denied their application, was denied a permit and by the Planning Commission of the county. And again, that was in December, and it was expectedly appealed to the Board of Supervisors. Well, the Board of Supervisors, just weeks ago, in late March, had a hearing for it, and they decided to return the application to the Planning Commission for some further consideration. But there was significant seeming opposition to it, just on the grounds of being not needed, not necessary, opposition from the local residents in that immediate area, and also on some issues related to the reputation and past fines from governments elsewhere upon the developer or the company that wants to build this gas station. And this will come up for a hearing again on May 7th. It will be before the Board of Supervisors a second time, again scheduled for May 7th. I wanted to mention that people that want to look into that issue, the overall campaign for a ban at all, let alone for this particular location, you can get information about that by contact the email address mendocinonewgasban@gmail.com. Once again, mendocinonewgasban newgasban@gmail.com. And if you want to look at the program on the Grassroots Institute's webpage, you can find it there at www.grassroots-institute.org/no-new-gas-stations. Again, grassroots-institute.org/no-new-gas-stations. And again, May 7th will be the time to, if you want to be involved or make any comments to the Board of Supervisors about it, that will be the time to do it. We are just past, well past the bottom of the hour, and so we like to take whatever calls people would like to call in about during the second half of our program. So the number here is 895-2448. Our guests today are Eileen Mitro and Crispin Hollinshead, both of Climate Action Mendocino, and we're talking about what is being done locally and what you can do locally to diminish climate change in this particular era. The reasoning being that some of the headlines about what's coming this year look like it'll be significantly hotter than last year, and so heat predictions that have been coming for quite a few years, well, we're going to see them, very likely see them being much worse this year than even last. And the number here again, 895-2448, if you'd like to get in the conversation with a comment or a question. I was intending to have some input during today's program on what's in the way of progress. And I was hoping for someone from the address where I get emails from, dsmog.com. It used to be called dsmogblog.com, but now it is just dsmog.com. So if you want to check out that address, you can see what some of the resistance has been from the corporate world and from the existing corporations with financial interests in just doing what we've always been doing. Any comments on that?
I think one enormous obstacle was pointed out at the Veterans for Peace confab that we were at this weekend. And Mariah Gallardon with TUC Radio, she was looking at the NOAA global land and ocean anomalies as far as temperature. And she noticed there was a spike in 1940, a spike in the 50s, a spike in the 60s, and then she went, that sounds familiar. And she went and looked up when all our recent wars were, and sure enough, those anomalous heat spikes, they correspond with the wars that we've been having. And then when it got to 1980, it just spiked and went up and up and up. It's like perpetual war and has never gone back down. And so the military is exempted from a lot of these efforts to rein in the climate problems. And that might be the biggest problem of all.
Well, they are the biggest fossil fuel user in the country. I do know that. We have a call coming in, so let's see what they have to say. Hello, caller. You're live on the air. What's your first name and from where are you calling? Oops, let's try that again. Caller, you're live on the air. What's your first name and from where are you calling?
I'm actually pulled over on the road to Little River. And my first name is Esther.
Mm-hmm. So what would you like to ask or comment?
Well, I'd like to say something about our governor. I know he purports to be very green and he's done various green things. And I'm very appreciative of that. However, he is the person that appoints people on the Public Utilities Commission. And the people on that commission are very invested in carbon fuel. So I just want to put that out. That's it.
Well, thank you. That is my understanding also. So, and yes.
Yeah.
Chris, would you like to comment on that?
Yeah, I agree with that completely. And I think that the real problem here is that for all his green credentials, Newsom really also represents the moneyed interest, which is not unique to him. And the real issue is, at what point do the people that control the finances realize that killing the planet really isn't a good business model? You know, I mean, even they will be affected by that. And I was very encouraged, like I said a little earlier, that the head of the Fed says that the uninsurability of our infrastructure as a result of the climate crisis is now one of the biggest inflation pushers. And as we move further along, I mean, last summer was the hottest summer on record, but I heard some guy say it'll be remembered as the coolest summer for the rest of our lives. That will get people's attention eventually.
Yeah. Well, thank you. My concern is that the governor, I think, is interested in becoming our president. And I question his green credentials from the past. But it's really his green values. And I think that it's about getting political donations. That's why he's doing it.
That brings us back to money and politics, a frequent topic on this this program series. Go ahead, though.
Well, I think I said what I need to say. I'm going to sign off.
Okay. Well,
thank you so much
for your comment.
Doing what you're doing. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Steve, could I say something here?
Yes, certainly.
I think that the struggle to make the case has to continue, but I think we need to take some comfort in the fact that it's not going to go away until we actually deal with it. And dealing with it is much more than talking about it. Dealing with it has got two big parts. One is to stop adding more carbon into the atmosphere, and the other one is to start working to take carbon out that's already there. We've added a trillion tons in the last 200 years. And if we really want to leave a habitable planet for our descendants, we have to deal with this, because the possibilities of what could go bad, we haven't even touched tonight. And we're just looking at what's already going on. And the thing that gets people's attention here in the community is all of a sudden now fire insurance is being canceled. And that's a consequence of unaddressed climate issues.
I should add that it was only a few years ago that I read the first article I've ever seen about climate change issues being of concern in, I believe it was Forbes magazine and other magazines about finance. This topic is new for them. I mean, it's only been just in very recent years. But that will have major influence upon the thinking of people that make the big decisions. The other thing I want to say to look for, speaking of insurability, look for a milestone at some point in the future, because it was, I don't know, 5 years ago, maybe somewhere in that range, where one of the refineries down the Gulf Coast was hit hard by one of the hurricanes, and it was out of action for some time. But the milestone to look for is when one of those happens and whoever insures that infrastructure says, we're not going to pay to rebuild it because it's just going to happen again. You'll look for that kind of thing in the future to get the attention of the finance industry and actually, at a whole level of motivation that doesn't exist yet. It's just coming, just growing now, but it doesn't really exist yet. In society. The other thing I'll mention with a little bit of comedy or maybe a little bit of sarcasm is that you can still buy houses in Florida and get insurance for them. It hasn't hit there yet. There's little rumblings of it, some articles written about it, but you can still go there, buy a house, low level elevation. The whole state's pretty low level, and get insurance and just ignore climate until it hits you down there. So,
yeah, I think when we're talking and celebrating Earth Day, there's something we really need to celebrate, and that's our indigenous communities. They're leading the fight to save us from climate change and other various environmental disasters. And this is comments that I found in this book, Socialism Seriously, by Danny Katch, K-A-T-C-H. And he says that globally, indigenous people make up 5% of the population, but live on lands that contain 80% of the planet's estimated species. This is not a coincidence. Indigenous people just don't happen to live in those parts of the world that have the most species of plants and animals. They have energetically protected ecosystems from capitalist and colonialist invasion and destruction because they understand the connection to natural surroundings in a way others do not. A 2021 study found that indigenous resistance to fossil fuel projects in the U.S. and Canada over the past 10 years prevented greenhouse gas pollution that was equivalent of almost a quarter of the total annual emissions from those two countries. So again, that's a shout-out to the real environmentalists, the original environmentalists, and the best environmentalists, mm-hmm. who, incidentally, are suffering the most in many ways, one of which is one-third of the people who are killed for environmentalism are indigenous people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, particularly in other parts of the world. We have another call coming in. Hello, caller.
Yeah, there's horrible feedback on the radio. You can't even understand it, so I just wanted to let you know.
Okay, thank you for that. I will try and test and see if we can get rid of that. Thanks for letting us know.
Bye-bye. Maybe I was too close to the mic.
Well, let's do a little test here. Well, there is some odd little boings going out mixed in with all the rest of the sound. I do not know what to do about that. Let me turn off the other than the first, the main two main mics here and see how that makes a difference. Well, that sounded better for some seconds there. I don't know what to do. Apologies. So we'll just continue. The number here is 895-2448. That's in area code 707, of course. 895-2448. We're here with Eileen Mitro and Chris Hollinshead of Climate Action Mendocino talking about what actions people are taking and can take locally about climate change, some of the scary news that's coming up. And we should spend a few minutes talking about activities coming up this weekend for Earth Day. So who would like to comment on that?
Oh, I'm excited about Earth Day this year. Typically, we go to the farmer's market in Table and have a good time talking to people that shop at the farmer's market. But the city of Ukiah this year has decided to have a major Earth Day event at Todd Grove Park between 10 and 2 on Saturday, April 20th. Somewhere in all of that, we got the idea to have an electric vehicle showcase. We've lost count on the number of electric vehicles that will be at the showcase. Many, many different models and makes, and there will be owners nearby at their car to help answer questions and explain to people how they function with their electric vehicle. And I happen to have one, and I will never go back. So along with the EV showcase, Climate Action Mendocino will have a table dealing with food waste and how to separate your waste. I know a lot of people have difficulty with that. City of 10,000 Buddhas will be there. I believe the Ukiah Valley Trail Group will be, and many other organizations that are environmentally focused. Also, the city of Ukiah has been offering a flea market every month, and that will be there as well. So it'll be a fun event for the whole family. Do try to come. And I just want to do a information piece for Grassroots Institute Climate Crisis Working Group, which will be at the Noyo Food Harvest, located on the Fort Bragg High School campus at 300 Dana Street in Fort Bragg. That event is from 12 to 4 and free to everyone. The Climate Crisis Working Group will have information about local efforts to create a climate and economic resilient community. So if you're on the coast, go to Fort Bragg High School, the Noyo Food Forest. If you're inland, we'd love to see you at Todd Grove Park. And that'll be our Earth Day. Oh, and also, I forgot, I don't know why, on April 25th, Thursday, Mendocino College is celebrating their Earth Day, and Climate Action Mendocino will be there from 10 to 2, right out in front of Schatz, which is between... which is just next to the library. We'll have a table there with information. And as far as I understand it, the auto mechanic class will be there with the electric vehicle that they put together and talking about some clean energy ideas.
I want to see that. Okay, and clear up for me, those are Saturday.
The Todd Grove event is Saturday, April 20th. Mm-hmm. The Greenhouse Grassroots Institute Climate Crisis Working Group event is Saturday in Fort Bragg. And the Mendocino College event is Thursday, April 25th on campus.
Great. Okay. And again, at Todd Grove Park for... on Saturday, and also at the Noyo Food Forest, I believe it's called, over on the coast, and that is at Fort Bragg High School, I believe. Okay, and 12 to 4 on Saturday for the coast. Okay, any other comments anyone wants to make? 895-2448. We have a few minutes left. And any other comments from anyone here?
I think you should tell people how they, if they live in Ukiah, how they could join the Climate Action Mendocino.
Oh, yes, right. And that requires a simple email to our hero here, who I thought I had this on the outline here. Whoops, here comes our next caller. Let's take that. Hi, caller. What's your first name and from where are you calling? I hear nothing. So please call back. I'm sorry. I cannot hear a thing on the phone.
Well, let me tell you the email address that comes directly to me. I'm very private with your email addresses. If you send an email to climateactionmendocino@gmail.com, it will come to me and we'll put you on our mailing list. We send two emails a month, typically one to let you know about our meeting and one to give you the minutes of our meeting. And I can also connect you with Grassroots Institute Climate Crisis Working Group if you send me an email.
And caller, you are on the air. What's your first name and from where are you calling?
Gary from Lake County. I heard, you can hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you fine.
Okay, induction ovens were mentioned earlier. I would like more details about, you know, which is the best oven to use, the different type of ovens, and what the trend seems to be.
Great. Okay. Eileen, is it?
We just bought one and installed it, and it's like an electric car. You'll never go back. It's awesome. However, it's not an oven. It's a stove, a cooktop. The oven is a resistance heater, but it's pretty efficient. With solar, if you have battery storage, then you're functioning on your own electricity much of the time. We went through Costco to find ours, but they're all over the place now and quite good. So if you need more information, email.
Another alternative is the Sonoma Clean Power Energy Center in Santa Rosa. They have a lot of information. They've got a lot of examples of different brands down there. It's their energy center. I don't know the address, but it's Sonoma Clean Power.
And one of the things they do is offer you free pots and pans and a cooktop that you can put on your countertop. It's 110 watt.
Volts.
Volts. You would think I'd know that. And so they loan you the pans. You need pans that work on magnetism, and it's really worth going down there and getting a cooktop and trying it for a few weeks with the pans that they loan you.
All these work on 120 volts rather than like 220?
The cooktops work on 110, and the stoves, the actual ovens, which they also make, are probably 220, although yes, I don't know that for a fact.
Yeah, okay.
Those are traditional resistance heating.
No. They make induction ovens.
Ovens
too.
Also? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And
and that's different? That's different from the current electric stoves and ovens that people use, you know, from years now?
Yes. It's a different method of transferring the energy. It's an induction rather than a resistance.
And much more efficient.
Yeah. It's about a third the power.
And I recommend you do check them out first. I have a couple of portables. They're okay, but I suspect the full cooktops are more consistent, so that you get hot spots and cold spots. That's what I found with the portable one. We have to wrap things up. We only have about 20 seconds left.
Thank you.
So thank you for your call. And to our guests, Eileen and Chris, thank you for your comments from Climate Action Mendocino. And thanks for listening. This has been Corporations and Democracy. We're here on third Thursdays from 7 to 8 p.m. And we'll be back on May 16th.